Some of them are general information. I know Dave, he called me, actually. We talked the day I was leaving, I think. And I know he has had some things to say. I thought it might be helpful if I would talk to you about the work in general that we've undertaken. So before I get started, let me tell you just a few things about that. Last August, Brother Shane Clark informed me that they were looking to make some changes. Now, this work has been ongoing for quite some time. Here's the history of it. There was a gentleman by the name of Tom Music. He was an elder at a little church in Alabama. He was very instrumental to this work, and he kept it going, put a lot of his own money into it. And a few years ago, I think about probably 2014 or so, Brother Music passed away. That left the work that was being done with the School of Preaching and various missions effort kind of in limbo. At that point, the church in Mumford, Alabama, began overseeing that work. Now, as you all know, I've been going there for many years, but I wasn't really going on behalf of the congregation at Mumford or anything like that. I just happened to know these people, was going there to do mission. I worked with them. Now, the church at Mumford, Alabama, did a great job. However, they ran into a little difficulty. They had three elders. One of the elders, the one that was most intimately involved with this work, as it happens, his wife became ill, and he felt that he needed to step down. Shane is one of the other elders and preacher there. And so what I've been doing over the years, when I would go, I would call Shane. And because I knew they didn't have anybody there that went. And so I would try to keep them informed about my observations and impressions. And we were comfortable enough with each other, even recommendations. So anyway, he said, we need to have somebody else oversee it. So I asked these elders to do that, and they have agreed to do that. That means, see, they already oversaw the money for two Kenyan preachers, plus money for me when I make trips. But this is a big undertaking, much bigger budget, a lot more work, and I'm very appreciative. I really feel like this is an improvement just because the difference is that Mumford didn't have anybody that went. I go. So hopefully that's a positive thing. So I said all that in part to tell you about this particular trip from January 31st till February 10th is the time that I was actually there. This trip was not designed to do a lot of evangelism. We managed to do some. I was there for two reasons. One was to teach in their school. They're a little overwhelmed. They need as much of that as they can. I go in and I teach a week-long course on whatever they ask me to teach. The other week, we're making plans, settling things, getting things organized, and making some visits to congregations where we've already done work. So that's pretty much it. Let me go ahead and get started. If you don't know where Kenya is, it's East Africa on the Indian Ocean. I myself have never seen the Indian Ocean because I work on the other side of the country next to Lake Victoria. It's also the southern half of it, if you care about the geography. I've never been to the northern half of Kenya. It's mostly desert. There aren't very many people there. And Varun tells me there's a lot of bandits. So he recommends I don't spend a lot of time up there. So as it happens, my work doesn't take me there. But you can see, if you're close enough, you can see the little blue there next to Kenya. That's Lake Victoria. And this area that I have highlighted here is where the first part of our journey takes us. That very generally defines what's called the Rift Valley. The Rift Valley is a very famous geographical feature. It's basically a crack in the Earth's crust. It actually runs all the way the Dead Sea area in Israel is actually part of Rift Valley, even though that's across the sea. And it is a great fault in the Earth, and it's a wonderful place to see. My purpose this time, usually I'm down there in the south making a visit to Maasai country. I could not make it work with my schedule. I'm assuming this thing's got a pointer on it. Is that the little? Yep. Okay, if you can see this, down here is Maasai country. I was up in here, Kalenjin area. While I've got you looking at this, just to remind you, my home base is there with a red dot. I put the red dot on it. And we had to come all the way over here for a couple of days, and that's over next to Uganda. So anyway, here's my good friend, Varun Wasanga. Varun is the director of the School of Preaching, a tremendous gospel preacher, good friend. And I think that he is just doing phenomenal work. He has considerable responsibilities, and I do love spending time with him. I don't know why, but I have always mistreated Varun, and I give him a hard time, and I couldn't tell you exactly why, except it's fun. I actually tested a little theory on him this time. We were riding someplace, and I was bored, and that's bad news. So just out of the blue, I said to Varun, Varun, I'm going to give you some advice. I said, if your wife ever gets mad at you, all you have to do is say, calm down and be reasonable, and everything will just smooth right out. What I was checking to see is how things are alike across cultures. Varun looked at me and he said, but that would trigger a violent response. and then he says to me, she would say, you judge me to be unreasonable? And then I would have to run away from my own house. So I thought, okay, things are the same all over, aren't they? But anyway, that's kind of what I do with Varun on a regular basis. This is Philip Kipsang. And one of the reasons we were there at their request, this is a place I've been to quite a few times. If you can remember back several years, the church here at Chibunyo, they were actually meeting under feed sacks. And I was there just, at his request. We want to see you. We want to talk to you. Those kinds of things. By the way, that's Elizabeth Hetrick who joined me on this trip. I'll talk to you about what she was doing in a moment. But they were able to build, through the generosity of brethren over here, this is what it looks like on the inside, a lot better than feed sacks. I do appreciate the work that they're doing. I pay attention to what they're doing, how they're going about it. They are very careful to teach thoroughly before they baptize. There was a lady that we baptized my first trip there. I didn't baptize her, and they keep giving me credit for her decision, and I don't think I actually had a lot to do with it. I think that's kindness on their part. But I asked about her, and they said, well, she has a business. This was during the day, during the week. She couldn't be here. She's still faithful, and that's always great news to hear. Elizabeth was only with me for about a week. If some of you may have met Josh Hetrick, who's a preacher over at Berkeley Springs, one of my former students at the School of Preaching and a good friend. Elizabeth came with us last year, and she proved to be a tremendous asset because, and it kind of reminds me of what the Bible teaches us about how the body works together in 1 Corinthians 12. I don't know if you ever read that thoroughly, but you're talking about how the different people, it's important that everybody's not the same in the church. You know, the eye can't, and the ear, you know, the ear can't say, because I'm not an eye, I'm not of the body, and so on and so forth. Well, Here's Elizabeth, and she learned some things in her very first trip that I never would have known. She learned that there was a tremendous need for products for babies, particularly diapers and feminine products. Nobody would have told me that. So she, her main purpose on this trip was she brought a bunch of stuff with her, things that were suitable for them, that were reusable, washable and reusable. And she was there at Chibunyo to deliver some of those to people and make life a little better for them. And like I said, that's not a thing that ever would have, number one, occurred to me, and number two, nobody would have told me. So it was important that we had somebody, I don't know if I'm an eye, I'm probably more of a mouth, but it was important we had another part of the body there to learn those things. The young lady sitting beside her is Maggie, and probably some of you remember my good friend Bernard Kagaga, that's his daughter. So she was, by the way, she went with us everywhere, and again, tremendous help to us. She and Elizabeth have become great friends, but she is able to help with the communication in ways that other people cannot. Elizabeth also, I got a lot of pictures of her doing things with the kids. She was there to teach lessons to the kids, which is primarily what she did last year. So after conducting our meetings in Chibunyo and also at the local school of preaching, I didn't get any pictures of the Beaumont School of Preaching. It is a very, very good and vital school. It's right where a school needed to be in the Rift Valley. One of the reasons I've been so concerned about the Rift Valley is this, and I'll just give you a brief history. There were, in just that portion of the Rift Valley, something like 35 Churches of Christ. I learned by talking to the men at Beaumont, I'd been given faulty figures all this time. I kept saying there were 35 churches in Rift Valley. One of them looked at me and said, 500? Well, Rift Valley goes a lot farther than I thought. That figure was just around where you just were at Chibunyo. Well, what happened is people subverted those churches and they fell away from the faith. And they began doing things in worship they shouldn't do and teaching things they shouldn't. Brother Bernard and Brother Varun were making inroads. They kept going there and teaching, getting opportunities to teach and preach, and they kept doing that. And now these congregations have come back to the truth. That's one of the reasons I'm so interested in Chibunyo. They're one of the churches that were gone, and now they're back. So some of our brethren have established a school there at Beaumont, which is a pretty large city nearby. The problem is what they want me to do is commit to teaching for them as well. And the truth is I can't handle two different schools. And I've got to say no to that. I hope some other people will say yes to it. But my loyalty is to the Thomas Music School. And so I can't let anything take that away from me. So we're back now close to home at Kalamindi, which is near Ndewa, Kenya. Kalamindi doesn't show up on a map, but if you ever look up Ndewa, it does, although you'll never be able to spell it. It's N-D-W-H-I, I think is how it's spelled. when you get these Kenyan spellings, you keep wanting to ask Vanna for a vowel. But anyway, this is at Ndisi. And this was actually taken last year. I probably showed this to you. This was the building in D.C. Good old Brother Vitalis. He's such a humble man. He said, we just want some new tin to repair our building. And so Varun and I inspected their building. And this is Varun and I looking. See that piece of wood sticking out there? I reached up right after this picture was taken and went, snap! Snapped it off. Well, we figured they actually needed a new building, and again, due to the generosity of brethren over here, including some of you, that's Brother Vitalis to the right, Varun's to the left. I don't know if you can pick me out of the picture or not, but this is the building that was built there, and they have something like 40, 45 in attendance every Sunday, And so it was needed. Now, you may wonder about all this building of buildings. Because, you know, New Testament times of churches new, poor area. A lot of times they're meeting in somebody's home, right? That is probably culturally less acceptable in Kenya than it would be here. In Kenya, if you are meeting as a religious group in somebody's home, that means you're not really a religious group to the other people in the community. Even if that home is bought and by the church, and then that's all it's used for. It used to be a house. To their mentality, it's the culture that says you're not for real. You really need to build a dedicated building in order for the community to be interested in what's happening there. So we build buildings. Do it as cheaply as possible. Again, we're distributing, or Elizabeth is, some things for local women and children. The lady on the left, very important to our work in the School of Preaching. That's Dorothy Kagaga, Maggie's mother, Bernard's widow. And she handles, she's on the payroll with good reason. She earns every penny that she gets. She takes care of things. You know, you got eight preaching students who are away from home. And Carlos, it's not like West Virginia School of Preaching. You don't get enough money where you can feed yourself. It's up to the school to feed you. So the meals are provided, the laundry is provided, all those kinds of things. And it keeps these ladies hopping. Dorothy has a couple of ladies who help her out. So that from there we move on to Western Kenya. Western Kenya is that area I showed you a moment ago. And it's on the northwest, up above Lake Victoria. Where we're standing right here is probably 2 miles from the Uganda line. The man that you're looking at is a very important man in that area. He's not important because of an official title or anything like that. He's just, it happens this way. He's a preacher in that area that is widely respected. And he's one of the men that we've supported since 2011. This is Julius Okelo Manyuru. And Julius is a very, very capable gospel preacher. Now, when he gets me to come up there to, and it's, the area is just called Western Kenya. When he gets me to come up there, it is always an adventure. Because of his influence, he's just in charge of, he knows I'm coming, he gets all these preachers in here. And then they want me to lecture on some topic, and then I have to field questions. And usually that will take 4 hours or more. I'll be standing up there just handling questions from these preachers, and man, they are good questions. And it's always an encouraging thing. This year was a challenge. I don't know what I ate, but I had a bad case of Montezuma's revenge, and I'm standing in front of an audience sweating for like 3 hours, just hoping and praying that I get through it. Made it. Not sure how, but I did make it. So this was the one place where we did some evangelism. Julius actually had a class organized for me to teach. And going back to the last one, I'd forgotten about she's in this. This behind Julius to the left in the green dress, her name was Janet. And she was sharp as a tack. She's a school teacher by trade. Her English was just excellent. And she was one of the ones studying. She once was a Pentecostal. And she's one of the ones I was studying with. And you could tell by her questions which direction she was going, and she then, along with 7 others, were baptized into Christ. This river, by the way, is the border between Uganda and Kenya. That's Varun there who actually did the baptizing of these good folks, and there, like I said, there were 8 of them who were baptized. We have a group picture here at some point. There's one with Julius and Once again, I don't know if you can spot me, if I look any different than the other people in the picture, but hopefully you can spot me. And you may be interested to know this. The last time I was at that river, there were guys smuggling things across the border from Uganda. And I thought, man, I don't know how they're going to feel about my standing here watching them. And I put my camera up, and they're just waving as they're smuggling across the river. There's a security guard with a machine gun just a few yards up that way, but $20 will take care of that. Yeah. Anyway, this is the village. This is actually right next to Brother Julius's home. And like I said, he's a very influential man in that area. It's very important, the work that he does, not only for that congregation. By the way, I'm not sure how this happened, but I neglected to get a picture of the new building that we're building there at Marambo. But it's similar to another one I'm going to show you in a minute, so I guess you can imagine that. But he's very important to the work. He comes down to Kalamindi, I think, twice a year, typically. Stays a week, teaches a short course, and he's a graduate of the preaching school in Tanzania and is very well-trained, very, very skilled, very knowledgeable, and certainly qualified to teach. There was another gentleman that I've met the last two occasions, and his name is Juma Wenceslas. And Juma is a fantastic Bible student, and if the money were there, if I had all the money that I wanted for this, I would recommend that we get him there on a full-time basis and put him on the payroll. And maybe that'll happen sometime, but as I'm going to explain to you in a little while, we have a priority thing that we have to honor in the near future. But that definitely is on the back burner. I mentioned it to Varun, and Varun thinks that'd be a tremendous idea too. I should have included the old building up there at Maramba. This is the new one from the inside. The old one had walls leaning and was in pretty sorry shape. This one is much more serviceable, and there I am desperately trying to get all the questions answered so I can get back to where I can get to a restroom. Oh, I did include it. That's what the old building looked like on the inside. That's not a camera trick if you can tell how far the walls leaned on the right. That's how far the wall was leaned. And compare that to this, and they've got a much better facility. And there's the new one. That's pretty much the same view, that versus that. So much better. Once again, Elizabeth, with Maggie's help, was able to do some things with the local children, local women, getting started. She has gotten many donations. Some businesses even found out what she was doing and made donations for her. So again, she did some fantastic work. Last year, we built this building, and this is worth a story right here. This is at Mahuru Bay. Mahuru Bay was meeting in a really ramshackle building, and Mahuru Bay is where we went on my last day there in 2022. Probably one of the best days of evangelism that I've ever experienced. If you heard my presentation last year, maybe you remember my talking to you about how Varun targeted three people in the community who were attending but were not yet Christians. And he sent Van Sprague to one home, he sent DJ to one home, and I went to this man's home. His name's Godfrey. When I got there, the house was full. I didn't count how many people were there. And as I was looking over the thing, I thought to myself, this is exactly like Cornelius, because the Bible says Cornelius invited his family and his friends to hear Peter preach. So I spent the next however long it took teaching him about Cornelius. And I remember asking him, I said, Godfrey, are you a good man? And he sort of hemmed and hawed. I said, I think you're a humble man, so you don't want to say I'm a good man. I said, but let me ask you this. Do you try to do the right thing? And he said, yes, I do. And so that was our lesson, how that a good man like Cornelius needed the gospel in order to be saved. And I remember I got to the end of that lesson and I asked him, I said, Godfrey, I'm going to ask you a question. The answer's not in the Bible, but I'm pretty sure you're going to know the answer because it just makes sense. I said, who do you think the first one to be baptized in that group was? And he said, Cornelius. I said, I think so too, because I know what it's like to be a father and to try to lead. And I asked him, I said, will you lead your family into the water? And he said, yes, I will. And we baptized many people that day. Now, I told you all that story to say this. Here we are a year later to check out the construction. And there's Godfrey, and he's the head of the building committee. So I was very, very happy about that. So clearly he's, you know, he's involved and he's growing. And the gentleman there to the far left is the guy who's stepping in as the preacher. His name is Adon. Couldn't tell you who the other three are. But that's, I do know Godfrey well. So at the end of our my little less than 2 weeks there, my role was to teach the book of Job in a week. Now, that's a problem to start with. And then you add in the fact that Job is a literature-heavy book. You really have to deal with the literature in Job. And I'm trying to teach people to whom English is a second language. Now, the Thomas Music School of Preaching is an English-speaking school. But as I've told you many times, the fact that someone in Kenya speaks English doesn't help a lot. Because not only am I having to deal with their accent, they're having to deal with mine. And so I have to repeat a lot, and I have to think on my feet and try to figure out how to explain some of these. You know, Job is full of these literary gems. But how do you explain I escaped death by the skin of my teeth to somebody for whom English is a second language? That's in Job. just to give you one example. So it was very challenging. We made it through. These are very good men here. I could tell you most of their names, but this is. By the way, the guy standing behind me in the back, I didn't have any pictures of him until just now. That's another man that we have supported now for 11 and a half years, and his name is Richard Oroco. He is the dean, the academic dean of the Thomas Music School, and just doing a wonderful job. I couldn't be more pleased with the work that they're doing. That brings us to our challenge. Here's the challenge. Pardon me, by the way, I got till just now before I had to cough. I've had a terrible cough the last couple of days. So I'm going to hit the cough drop again. I became aware a few weeks ago that we have, I don't want to say a crisis, let's call it a challenge. Varun informed me that the government has told them that they must build a modern kitchen. Now that sounds like governmental interference. That is until I inspected their current kitchen. That's it. In this case, I'm on the government side. And this is where the food preparation is currently taking place. I got a very rough estimate. When we say we're going to build a kitchen, it's going to be for a large number of people, say. But the government said you have to prepare food in a sterile area. Again, makes sense. And we're looking at about $50,000 that we got to come up with. Now, that can be over a period of time. What I'm going to be looking to do in the very near future, as quickly as possible, is getting about $10,000 of that raised. Here's why. The most important thing right off the bat is to buy some supplies, building supplies, and stack them up. If you buy building supplies and stack them up, that tells the government that you've started. So it gets them off our back. So that's what we're going to do. And if you're wondering, you know, we have a budget for the school. We have a certain amount of money there. I would rather raise this separately rather than dip into that as little as possible. And so I'm going to be working on that. I've got probably, Brian, a couple of thousand to put toward that right now. I'm hoping to get some more Sunday. But my immediate goal is 10. Here's another picture of the current kitchen, which has duck nests in it and chicken nests. So I don't think that's an appropriate kitchen myself. And I got one more picture that I so regret that one guy isn't here tonight to see this, because I was going to irritate him on purpose, and that's Darren, your dad. This picture was designed just to irritate your dad. Because Dave asked me about a week or so before I left, he said, "Do you need anything?" And I said, "Yeah, I do. Matter of fact, I do. And you can get it for me." "Well, what's that?" I said, "I told Varun that I could get him a little air compressor. And given the roads you travel on and the situations you run into, I said, I'd really like to get him one of these little air compressors that plugs into a cigarette lighter." So Dave says, "No problem." And so you didn't end up paying for it, did you, Darren? Okay. But I knew Dave would say, "I don't want you to be telling everybody I did." So there's the duck on the nest, by the way. Yeah. And so I had told Varun what I was doing. He was in on the trick. I almost had him hold up a sign that says, "Thanks, Dave Parks," because I knew that would just make him mad. So you all could tell him I said that and told everybody about it so he could be irritated at me. But anyway, that's our next major challenge. It's the last picture in the bunch. I was trying to make myself as small as Elizabeth. Didn't quite work, did it? And that was right before we sent her home. And we have just a few minutes. Questions, comments, anything else? We got to. They shut down the school. Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's okay, now it sounds like it's a crisis. No, that's a challenge. I know I can get the 10,000 pretty quickly. I've got a couple of places. Like I said, I'm sitting on at least two right now, and I got a couple of places that I think are going to help us to a large degree. That'll get the ball rolling, then it's more work. I don't think you can build a building in this country for $50,000, but it wouldn't be much of a building, would it?
Does that have electric?
Yes. You know, it's funny you mention that. That's one of the problems at Beaumont. They don't have electricity. And I think they kind of got the cart ahead of the horse myself, because they're showing me their meager library. We need books, and I'm thinking, you need electricity and the internet so you can access some stuff is what you need, but they don't have electricity. We do here. Yes, Tom? They do. They do. Bernard had a very deep well dug, about 75 feet deep, and so they have, the way they do the water, it's down there far enough. I think it's safe, although I never test that theory. The way they do it is they pump it up to a big tank up on the roof. And so it just pumps, and then, you know, gravity does the rest. But, yeah, I watched them digging that, and it was the craziest thing I ever saw. You had two guys, one great big guy and one real little guy. And the big guy's lowering the little guy down the hole. And he's down there digging, and big guy's pulling up pails full of dirt. And I'm thinking, man, you're down there deep enough, you could die. But I guess he didn't. I never heard anything about it anyway. But anyway, he's got a deep well with good, safe water. So that is a huge plus.
The churches you built there, is there a chance of people coming, overtaking the stuff from them? Or
It's another really good question. If you didn't hear, Tom asked, is there a possibility of people taking these things over? Typically, the buildings, like the building in D.C., that's actually on Brother Vitalis's own property. So that's fine. I know in some other places they have actually had trouble with that, because the problem is some of the brethren will build without having clear titles and have actually lost buildings in the process. We have not had that happen in this area. I probably will be doing a little more checking in the future based on some of the stories I've heard. So, anybody else? Yeah. Wait a minute. Before I do that, I forgot to show you this thing. This was given to me by the Callingens, and it's kind of like a canteen. You're supposed to boil milk and put it in there and let it cool, and they said it tastes very good if you do that. And on at least one occasion, there's a guy who was a local exorcist, and he was accusing a lady of being a witch, and he claimed you could put somebody's soul in there. I've got my doubts on that one, but that's what he claimed. All right, back to the students and support and things like that. That is yet another challenge, Dave. The support while they're in school is sufficient. Part of our budget, the budget that you have seen, is per student, I think they get like $50 a month. And that gets them through, especially if we're feeding them and doing their laundry and things like that. The biggest problem with preaching schools in Kenya is this. They graduate, and I've had many of them ask me very nicely, but would you consider trying to raise support for me so I can preach? And my response is, no, I can't. And that sounds terrible, but we're graduating 8 a year here, or every 2 years here. Up at Kisumu, they're graduating 16. Beaumet's going to graduate 10. You do the math. And this is every year. There simply is not enough resources to do that. What they are really going to need to do, and we're trying to find a solution. Bernard was trying to find a solution. One idea he had was this: your last quarter, we're going to teach you the Bible. Last quarter, we're going to teach you a trade. And that may be the solution, but so far they haven't come up with a way to do that. I think that's a great idea. And again, I know it sounds hard-hearted, and all these guys, as far as I can tell, are worthy of support, but the numbers just don't add up. So what we need is a guy to come out of a village someplace and come to school, get trained in the Bible, learn how to support himself, go back to where he came from, and work for the Lord and work for himself. That's got to be the solution, we think. Now, does that answer your question? But, these guys... The other thing, and this is, I didn't spend a lot of time talking about it this year. I did last year. But we have got to instead, I mean, we're training a lot of preachers. We need to do a better job of training elders. There are very few elders in the nation of Kenya. And some of these guys, they'd do the church more good, I think, if they go back where they came from, wherever that might be. And these guys are mostly of the Luo tribe. There's one guy that's a Luya that's up in western Kenya. I don't think we have any Kalenjins or Gusis, but we have in the past. And so they're all from similar areas is what I'm getting at. And what would really be great is to train them in the Bible and then have them serve as elders. But we're a little ways off from that. Well, you got me. I don't know how they recruit them. I'm serious. That's a complete mystery to me as far as how they learn about it. I will say this: there is generally a great desire to learn the Bible. So I think they have to turn a lot of people away. You got to realize, I think these guys are almost all married guys, and they get to see their families very infrequently. So it's like I said, there may be one or two that's not married, but most of those guys have families. So they're making quite a sacrifice to be there, and they're hungry for Bible, which is why I keep going back. That's what attracts me to the place. People are hungry for the Bible. So, yes.
How old are most of them then? There's no older men, they're all young?
The guy third from the right, Peter, is close to my age. He's the oldest of the group. And the guy standing next to him, his name is also Peter, the second from the right. Close to my age, anyway. Right here, this guy. It's all relative, yeah. He's in his 50s. This guy's probably in his 40s. This guy here is just a kid, but he's got a wife, and I don't know if he has kids or not. But he's probably 20. But he's got a, you know, they marry pretty young, typically. You mean from where's their home? Since they're all Lewis, I would say they're all within 100 miles. Oh, no. The typical mode of transportation is a motorcycle. They got these little 125cc motorcycles that carry up to 5 Kenyans. That's how most of them get around. Well, we got through most of the evening without that garbage, but there it is, just at the right time. Well, I'm done. I better quit. It's 10 till. Ed, were you able to hear most of that? Okay. I thought if he didn't hear, he wouldn't respond to me. So, have you already rung the bell? I saw Darren go that way. Thank you for your help in this. Okay.